Welcome to the End of Innocence, the JFK Assassination. I'm your host, John Young. So far in the last 5 episodes regarding the murder of Dallas police officer J.D. Tippit, we've encountered a mix of compelling evidence and puzzling anomalies in the case against Lee Harvey Oswald. There's strong incriminating material, but also strange details, like the honking police car outside Oswald's rooming house, and Officer Tippit's unusual behavior before his death that raises more questions than answers. Add to that the timing evidence that seems to exonerate Oswald, and you're left with a case that's anything but straightforward. For those approaching the JFK assassination with an open mind, it's a maze of contradictions. I would suggest if you missed any of the last 5 episodes, you go back and listen to them before moving ahead in our series. In our last episode, we looked at the timing factor. Could Lee Harvey Oswald have been the killer of J.D. Tippit, based on his documented movements of that day? So we are left with this question. If Oswald didn't kill Officer J.D. Tippit, then who did? In conspiracy circles, there are 3 Dallas police officers that are frequently named as having potential involvement in Tippit's murder. Harry Olson, William Westbrook, and Kenneth Croy. And we're going to talk about all 3 of these men today. According to some researchers, Tippit's murder was not a random act, but a carefully staged event designed to reinforce Oswald's guilt. The theory suggests that Tippit had knowledge of both the plan to kill JFK and the plan to set up Lee Harvey Oswald for the assassination, and for that reason, Oswald had to be silenced. The timing and location of the murder, near 10th and Patton, are seen as deliberate, with officers William Westbrook and Kenneth Croy allegedly arriving in a police car number 207 just moments before the shooting of Tippit. This theory suggests that while Lee Harvey Oswald was at the Texas Theater following orders, an Oswald double, who had been impersonating him for months before the assassination, met Tippit at the scene, where the murder was carried out in front of witnesses. So what was the goal? To frame Lee Harvey Oswald for both JFK's assassination and the killing of Officer J.D. Tippit, solidifying the narrative and justifying his arrest. Still don't buy the 2 Oswald theory? That's okay. I didn't either for years, until I researched it myself. Go back and listen to episodes 87 through 89 of this podcast, and then come back and talk to me about the 2 Oswald theory.
You know what I mean? But the answer could be that there were numerous Oswald lookalikes floating around Dallas for 6 months prior to the assassination, making all kinds of demonstrative moves. But the point of the matter is, you got all these Oswald lookalikes running around, and something is going on here. They're trying to corner Oswald, and he leaves the Texas School Book Depository. Whether he knows he's being cornered or not, he may have sensed it, he may not have sensed it, but he goes to the rooming house, gets his gun, gets a jacket. I mean, what is that police car doing outside the house? If somebody can ever explain that, they claim, and I believe it was Jerry Hill, because Sergeant Jerry Hill, said that he checked all the police cars and none of them were missing at that time. There were 3 missing and he had one of them. And somebody was going to pick up Oswald and finish this off in the middle of the day right then and there. When they get this, the police show up. One of the policemen who shows up is a guy named Captain Westbrook. Captain Westbrook claims to find a wallet on the ground. And he says to the Bennett, who is the FBI agent there, he says to him, do you know a guy, looking at the wallet, he says, do you know a guy named Lee Harvey Oswald? So Bennett says, no, I never heard of him. He goes, do you know a guy named Alec Heidel? He goes, no, I never heard of him, right? So that's kind of weird. And then, so you got this wallet, right? So when they arrest Oswald a half hour later, lo and behold, he's got his own wallet on him, right? Mm. So now the problem is that the Dallas news crew filmed what I just said to you. They filmed that footage of the Captain Westbrook with the wallet in his hand on film for the nightly news, saying, I found a guy's wallet named Oswald here at the site of the murder of Tippit. Now, keep in mind how fast that is, bro. Keep in mind, this is 35 to 45 minutes after the assassination of the president, and they're planting a wallet. That's a fact. They can't get around it, Eric. They can't get around it. Westbrook later goes to Southeast Asia and works for the CIA 3 years later, by the way.
Of course he does.
Right. Leaves the Dallas police force and goes and works in Laos for the CIA. That's a separate issue.
Tippit's death remains one of the most mysterious pieces of the JFK puzzle. It's not just about who pulled the trigger. It's about whether the entire sequence of events was orchestrated to create a convincing story for the public. Let's take a look at the three men that we mentioned earlier. Harry Olson was a Dallas police officer with a close personal connection to Jack Ruby, the nightclub owner who famously shot Lee Harvey Oswald. Olson's girlfriend at the time of the JFK assassination was Kay Coleman, a dancer at Ruby's Carousel Club. Olson and Ruby were well acquainted. Olson testified to the Warren Commission that he had seen Ruby at the club approximately once a week for 3 years, totaling around 150 visits. On the night of the assassination, Friday, November 22, 1963, Olson and Coleman reportedly spent several hours between midnight and 3 a.m. talking with Ruby in his car in a parking lot. According to Olson, Jack Ruby was deeply upset about the assassination and spoke at length about it. This late-night conversation suggests a level of intimacy and trust between the two men that goes beyond casual acquaintance. Where Olson becomes a figure of interest in conspiracy theories surrounding the murder of Officer J.D. Tippit is his proximity to the crime scene. At the time of Tippit's shooting, Olson was off-duty and working private security just a few blocks away. His geographical closeness has led some researchers to speculate about his possible involvement. However, Olson had a broken leg and was in a cast, which would have severely limited his mobility. Beyond his location, there is no direct evidence linking Olson to the Tippit murder. Harry Olson left the Dallas Police Department shortly after the assassination, moving to California in December 1963. He later married Kay Coleman, further cementing his ties to Jack Ruby's inner circle. While Olson's relationship with Jack Ruby and his proximity to the Tippit crime scene raises questions, the available evidence does not substantiate claims of his involvement in the Tippit killing. The more credible claim that there were some police officers involved in Tippit's murder comes from an overlooked witness, Doris Holan, who witnessed J.D. Tippit's murder from across the street. Holan was never called to testify by the Warren Commission, nor is there any evidence she was ever interviewed by either the Dallas police or the FBI. Like many important witnesses in the JFK assassination, she was discovered by private citizens many years after the fact. Local Dallas researchers Bill Pulte and Michael Branlow were the first to talk to her, which is weird since she only lived one door down from the crime scene of Tippit's murder at 409 10th Street on the second floor. This placed her in a perfect position to see what she was about to disclose. The most remarkable information to come to the fore in the two interviews she granted was this. As she looked out her window upon hearing the shots, she saw a second police car at the scene. It was in the driveway between 404 and 410 East 10th. This was adjacent to the spot on the street where Tippett's car stopped. Knowingly or unknowingly, Tippit had blocked the driveway, which led to an alley at mid-block. She said a man got out of the car, looked at Tippett's body, and went back down the driveway. He was alongside the car, which was retreating back toward the alley. She also saw a man fleeing the scene in a different direction. This is similar to what Aquila Clemens and Frank Wright said, but with the added element of a second police car. Captain William Westbrook and Officer Kenneth Croy are frequently cited by conspiracy theorists as figures of interest in the shooting of Officer J.D. Tippit. Much of this suspicion stems from inconsistencies in their account and the unusual presence of Captain Westbrook at several key locations where his official duties would normally place him. Let's begin with what Westbrook and Croy told the Warren Commission about their whereabouts between the assassination in Dealey Plaza and Tippit's murder. Westbrook claimed he walked alone for 22 minutes to the Texas School Book Depository. Upon arrival, he reportedly commandeered a vehicle to drive to the scene of Tippit's shooting after hearing that an officer had been killed at 10th and Patton. Officer Troy's account is equally puzzling. He said he offered to assist at Dealey Plaza, but was told by unnamed officers that his help wasn't needed, despite other off-duty officers being called in. After that, supposedly he met his estranged ex-wife for lunch, and then went to his parents' house to change clothes. At some point, Croy and Westbrook ended up together at the Tippit crime scene, where Croy handed Westbrook a wallet he claimed was given to him by an unidentified individual. One particular curious detail is that Officer Croy was reportedly the first officer to arrive at Tippett's murder scene. He told the Warren Commission he witnessed Tippit being loaded into the ambulance, yet Croy wasn't assigned to that area, didn't file any official reports about his actions that day, and was never formally interviewed by police afterward. Suspicion surrounding Captain Westbrook is amplified by the prominent role he played that day, despite his administrative position as head of personnel, a role akin to internal affairs. His involvement raises questions. For instance, Westbrook is credited with discovering the jacket that was linked to Lee Harvey Oswald, although he told the Warren Commission that an unknown person pointed the jacket out to him. Westbrook also received Oswald's wallet from Croy at the Tippit crime scene, even though other officers more directly involved in the investigation were present. According to Dallas Morning News reporter Jim Ewell, who was with him, Westbrook was among the first officers to arrive at the Texas Theater, where Oswald was apprehended. In other words, it was all in a personnel officer's workday. Thanks to being bored at his personnel desk, Westbrook became one of the few officers who showed up at the Texas School Book Depository, at the Tippit murder scene, and at the Texas Theater. Adding to the intrigue, William Westbrook resigned from the Dallas Police Department within a year of the Warren Report's release and took a position as a police advisor in South Vietnam under USAID, a government agency that has at times functioned as a front for CIA operations. While this doesn't confirm Westbrook worked for the CIA, it certainly opens the door to speculation. We've laid out the key facts surrounding the J.D. Tippit shooting. But before we draw any conclusions about what most likely happened, we need to zoom out and complete the picture, starting with Lee Harvey Oswald's arrest at the Texas Theater. When exactly did Oswald arrive at the theater? What did he do once he was inside? What really happened in the moments of his capture? And was Jack Ruby lurking nearby in the theater? And could there have been signs of a second Oswald at the theater? These answers might change everything. We'll see you next time. If you like what you hear every week and want to learn more about the assassination, please pick up my book, The End of Innocence, The Assassination of President John F. Kennedy. It's available right now on Amazon, or you can find it at www.endofinnocencejfk.com. In honor of the release of the JFK assassination records, I'm sending out signed copies of my book. If you would like one of these, please email me at endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com. The price is $40 for the soft cover and $60 for the hardcover, plus shipping and handling. I can promise you, you won't be disappointed in the book. It's an oversized coffee table style book. The book is over 500 pages with almost 1,000 pictures. You won't be disappointed. And hey, send me your comments about the book or this podcast at endofinnocencejfk@gmail.com.